Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Welcome, everyone, to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I am so grateful for all your support, your reviews, your subscriptions. This podcast is growing like crazy, so keep it up. And we have an incredible guest here today. She is someone that I have personally been coached by in a leadership program, and it is such an honor to welcome you to the show. Welcome, Judith Rich.
Oh, thank you so much, Rebecca. I'm delighted and excited to be here.
Yay. I am going to tell my audience a little bit about you because you are such an illustrious person. So Judith is an octogenarian coach, author of the best-selling book, Beyond the Box. She is also the host of the podcast, The New Beyond, which I had the honor of guesting on. She has spent almost five decades in the field of transformational coaching. She has coached people on many things, such as how to identify and break through their old patterns so that they can live the life of their dreams. Her work focuses on awakening one's dormant inner resources. She has coached and empowered profound breakthroughs to both individuals and organizations all over the world, including the United States, Europe, Asia, and South America. Her clients have included top executives in many industries and professions, such as building, banking, hotel management, pharmaceutical, education, financial, human resources, and nonprofit. So, Judith, you have such an amazing history of coaching and helping people, but I know you weren't always a transformational leadership coach. So how did you find your life purpose and work? Tell us a little bit of your origin story.
How far back do you want me to go? I go way, way, way back there.
Yeah. How did you find this work?
Okay. So we can start there. Well, I was a school teacher. I graduated from university with a master's degree in special education, and I taught special ed for several years. So that was that's the origins of my actual official career and official work in the world. But I found transformation and leadership work at a time in my life when my marriage was faltering. My husband and I had been in marriage counseling, and so we were looking for resources to support us. And he was introduced to this transformational work by a former student of his. So he actually did the work before I did.
Wow.
And I saw some very interesting shifts in him as a result of the work that he did. And of course, I was curious and wanted to know what happened and what's possible. So I gravitated to the work. And I have to say, I love to share this story about my first introduction to the work was an evening introductory event. At that time, they were called guest events, but it was basically an evening where people who had recently graduated from a training invited guests to come and learn about it. So that evening, I went, and before I entered the room where all the graduates and the people were, I just kind of stood on the outside of the room and looked in and had a feeling, a very visceral feeling about what was happening in there, just energetically. I'm very tuned in energetically. And the vibe of what was happening in there struck me viscerally. And a little tiny voice that I barely noticed at the time, but I did, you know, I took a little note of it. And now it's like speaks so loudly to me. This little tiny voice said to me, "You're home."
Wow.
And the reason that was so powerful for me was I had spent my whole life up until that time searching for my people, searching for my tribe, if you will, searching for my community, searching for the place where I felt I resonated energetically with the people and with what was happening there. And in this particular instance, I had not experienced anything yet. I didn't know anyone inside that room. I got a very clear message, "You're home." So I trust it when I get messages like that.
Yeah.
Fly in out of the blue, right? So I went into that evening and, you know, I was already enrolled. I mean, I just energetically and spiritually and emotionally, I was enrolled just by that little voice in me that said, "You're home." And so I went through the curriculum. I experienced, you know, I had so many breakthroughs and openings and breakdowns as well. But I discovered so much about myself. I just immersed myself in the work from there on. I was so hungry to know more about who I was. And that work was the beginning of what has turned out to be, you know, I'm now 50 years later down the road. A 50-year journey that is still continuing, not over yet.
Right.
Still going. I'm still learning. I'm still discovering. And it's, I have to say that other than being a parent and a grandparent, this is the most compelling, juicy, exciting, inspiring, invigorating, challenging adventure I've ever been on. So, of course, I'm signed up, you know, I'm signed up for the long term. So that's the long and the short of how I got here.
That's a great story. And you are an octogenarian. So if you don't know what that means, it means Judith is in her 80s. And you say you're still learning every day. So What is it that's different about you versus some other people in their 80s who are just like giving up and like watching the news all day or just, you know, playing, you know, card games and checked out? Like what's your secret been? Your secret sauce to stay so engaged and enlivened and so really like young spirited?
I'm 82. So I crossed the octogenarian threshold 2 years ago. And I don't want to suggest that people in their 80s or 70s or whatever age they are who choose a lifestyle, you know, a more serene, peaceful, restful lifestyle, one might, you know, traditionally call retirement. I'm not suggesting for a minute that's not okay or that's wrong or people shouldn't do that. Of course, people should do that if that's how they're called to be and spend their later years. And most people are. But I didn't come to the planet to do that. I came to the planet with a calling. I'm very clear about that. And so to be true to my calling and to be aligned with it, to be surrendered to it, to say yes to my calling, has taken me, you know, you talked about the different places in the world where I've worked. It's taken me to all of those places and to get to interact with people from all of these cultures. You know, you didn't mention Russia. You didn't include Mexico. Perhaps I didn't include those on my list of places. Yeah. But it has been such a privilege and an honor to be invited into people's lives at the depth of experience that I've been allowed to have with people, that I feel incredibly grateful to have lived the life that I've lived, that I'm still living. I feel incredibly blessed to get to do what I've done. And I've forgotten what your question was now. I'm not sure where I'm going.
It was, what is your secret to staying so engaged in life and like just excited, passionate about life and not just checking out?
Yeah. Well, so I started to talk about, really, I'm here, I'm doing and being and creating what I am out of my alignment with a calling. However, you know, as a kid, I was this way as a child, and what it looked like and what it still looks like to this day is intensely curious. I'm insanely curious about human being, about learning. Today, I'm curious about technology and artificial intelligence and all the things that are, you know, a part of our world today that were not a part of my world as a child. But as a child, I used to gather kids together in the neighborhood and invite them over and, you know, have little circles of kids where I'd invite them to stand up and share and kids stuff, you know, what kids were interested in. I was intensely curious about why people are the way they are, why they do what they do, you know, as from about age 7 on. And so that curiosity, I think, is what inspires me and drives me and has me continue to be passionate. I'm also, I have to say, I have to credit my genetics. My mother lived to 91. She was, can I say kick ass? Can I swear? Oh, no, we're on
Facebook. On this podcast. Yes, absolutely.
My mom was a badass woman. You know, she was physical and intense all the way up until she died at 91. And I think I really have, I'm wired the same way that she is. I also happen to be a double Aquarian with an Aries moon. And what that means astrologically, my Aries moon is the warrior. She's the pioneer. She's the one, she's the leader. Aries is the leader. And my double Aquarius sun and rising has me be a warrior for innovation and transformation and leadership and unity and oneness. So it's all married in this astrological cauldron that I live inside of. And so I'm just simply wired to be the way I am. And I think also, having done this work for 5 decades, having lived aligned with a calling, my energy is available to me. You know, I don't use my energy to resist what is, because I know that's futile. And that's a thing that I think so many people spend so much of their energy doing, resisting what is, being in reaction to what is, because, you know, most of the time, we don't necessarily like or want the way life is unfolding. If we're attached to having life be a particular way, if we want our life to be and look a particular way, and it's not that way, and it often isn't, right?
Yeah.
Then how do we meet those kind of moments in our life? How do we be with life when it's not occurring on our terms? Which I have to say, it usually isn't. Life is occurring on its terms.
Yes.
our job is to meet life as it is occurring, to bring our presence to the moment that is right in front of us. Because in that moment, which is now, is everything. Everything is possible and everything is available right in this current moment of now. So if I'm not so busy and distracted, struggling and resisting and preferring and complaining and whining and all of the things that we humans do, and I'm not saying that I never do any of that or that I'm above any of that. I absolutely am not. I am human and I have my human breakdowns and all of that. But I don't dwell there. I mean, I do it. I catch myself. I see what I've done. I'm able to course correct and shift and boom, get off of it and move on.
I think what you said is very wise about so much unhappiness is just a lack of acceptance of what is.
Yeah.
And wanting something other than what is and complaining, comparing, criticizing, judging. It's all just a lack of acceptance. And I would say to be grateful for what is, because, you know, there's so many things that we just take for granted and we focus on the minutiae of life when we have so much to celebrate in every moment.
That's very, very true, Rebecca. And I would add, how about being grateful for what is, even when it's not what you thought you wanted? It's easy to be grateful for what is when it aligns with what you want. But what about when it's not what you thought you wanted? Can you be with what is and be grateful for it when it doesn't feel good or it doesn't match your pictures? Because I suggest that within what is, even when it's not what we thought we wanted, there is something there for us. And what is happening, what is present in any given moment is there for our learning if we're willing, if we're open to learn from it.
Do you guys want to know my biggest beauty secret? It's called liquid collagen. I have been drinking this medical grade collagen now every day for 3.5 years. My skin is glowing. My hair is long and thick and shiny. Nails have never been stronger. I feel amazing in my body. I am in my early 50s and I feel like I'm 25 years old again. And people do not know my age. They are like, what? You're kidding me. It's the liquid collagen. So you gotta try this. We have two formulas. One is for anti-aging and joint health. And the other one is for losing fat and body composition. All you need to do is click the link in the show notes and you have an amazing promo code. Check this out. It will transform your body and you will feel balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And now back to the podcast.
So I teach that there really are no accidents, that what appears or what looks like in the moment might be an accident, might be the worst thing that ever happened to you in your life. And it's horrific and horrible and all of that. What I'm suggesting is that inside of that, if we're willing, and that's the work is to be willing to open and discover that in the darkest nights and on the darkest days, in the darkness is where we will find the seeds of our growth. Because, you know, seeds require darkness to germinate and to grow. And so I would say to listeners, do not resist and don't be afraid. And I know it's easier to say than done. So I hear you. I get it. It's challenging. And this is where the work is. But the work is to learn to embrace these dark moments. Learn to embrace these dark times. Just like right now in the world. May I go down this path with
you? Sure. Yeah,
like totally. What's happening right now in the world looks and feels pretty dark, right?
Yeah.
Where we are just collectively in the entire world, we're in a time of tremendous conflict and chaos and change that is happening so rapidly. Our human nervous systems were not designed to handle change at this pace. And so we feel exhausted. We feel overwhelmed. We're tired. Yeah, I get it. That is what we humans are experiencing on the planet today. And so you might be asking, yeah, and what exactly is there about all of this that I should be grateful for? And my answer to that would be, I know you didn't ask me that, but my answer to that would be, we are in a collective transformation process. So as individuals in my life has been about transformation, and essential to transformation is death and rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Has to do with death and rebirth. And so we are in the death of an old paradigm right now, collectively on the planet. We're in the death of an old paradigm characterized by domination and control and power over, and I would say patriarchy, male dominated power over domination. And that has been embedded in all of our structures and systems for thousands of years, thousands of years. And that system, that structure now is coming apart. And we're seeing it in governments, and we're seeing it in corporations, and we're seeing it in educational systems, and we're seeing it in cultures, and you know, we're seeing it on city streets, we're seeing it everywhere. It feels like it's all unraveling, and it is. And it's scary, and it's challenging. It's challenging for humans to be going through this right now, because it feels like the ground underneath our feet is shaky and moving, and there's nothing solid, and you know, there's nothing certain.
Well, how do we stay centered and happy and on our path of unfoldment as all this change is happening all around us and everything seems so chaotic?
Yeah, well, I think that it's important to know, to have a picture of what's actually happening, so that if we realize we are in a collective unraveling, and in that unraveling, there is a transitional period before we move into whatever we are moving towards. So we are in that transition period. I heard Brené Brown, and I've mentioned this in other podcasts, including my own, refer to us as Gen T, Generation T. Everyone on the planet today is a member of Gen T, which is Generation Transition. We are here as the transition between the crumbling of the old paradigm and whatever is coming next, which we don't know what that is. But the possibility of what that is, I think, is how we stay connected and centered. And I wouldn't use the word happy.
Yeah.
I don't think it's about being happy, because it's not. We're not necessarily happy as we're going through this, but that has nothing to do with our ability to be clear and direct and committed and focused and grounded inside of the chaos. So to be grounded in a vision, and to be grounded in a calling, and to be grounded and clear about who you are as a human being, and why you're here, this is critical for you, particularly during times like this, to stay on your path.
And what is, you mentioned your calling several times in this interview. What is your calling or your vision for your life?
My calling and my vision for my life is to be a catalyst for transformation, to be a catalyst for bringing together My astrological sign, Aquarius, means the union of opposites. It's the union of masculine and feminine, the yin-yang. So I believe that my calling is to be a catalyst for transformation. And my Aries moon has me be a warrior for that. So I'm actually a leader, a warrior for that. And as long as I have stayed aligned with that calling and I stay aligned with this work, my life is abundant. My life flows. My life is not easy, but I would say graceful.
That is a beautiful distinction. Let's talk about easy versus graceful.
Well, to me, easy is when the path is open and the path is clear and there's no challenges and I just, you know, I'm not challenged. But I don't think that life occurs that way. I think that all of our paths are riddled with challenges and obstacles and opportunities. And so if I see them as opportunities, I'm curious and I'm creative about how I navigate this path. And that becomes a graceful journey. I'm not pushing and forcing and I'm dancing. I'm dancing with life. I'm dancing with the challenges. I'm dancing with the obstacles. I'm curious. Oh, what could this possibly be for me? Because I think all these obstacles and challenges are really opportunities for each one of us to discover and learn why they're placed there. And if so, if I approach them with curiosity and creativity, be creative. That's what I call like a graceful dance. So I see my life that way. And every chapter of my life certainly has not been that way. I mean, my 20s and my 30s were rocky and, you know, divorces and breakdowns and uncertainty and instability and all of that that I went through prior to discovering my calling and discovering my work. So
what was your darkest night of the soul and how did you get through it?
Oh, I think I've had many dark nights of the soul.
What was your darkest dark night of the soul?
Probably it was the unraveling of my third marriage.
Mm.
And that was a hard one. That was, I mean, the first marriage, I was in my 20s. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no business getting married. I got married for the wrong reasons both times. Second marriage was to a beautiful man, a wonderful man, 15 years older than I. He's the father of my two children. He's no longer living. He passed away almost 20 years ago. But my third marriage was one that I was absolutely so clear was right for me. And I was committed to it. And, you know, I just poured all of myself into. And it wasn't mutual after a while. And the ending of that and the coming to terms with that really took me to the core of my soul. And I went through years after that, struggling to return to myself. I lost myself in that marriage. And I know that's why that marriage ended.
Well, what happened? Did he cheat on you or did he just file for divorce? Or both?
Both.
That is very painful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's betrayal and rejection, two of the hardest human emotions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I lost myself in that marriage, and it took me a long time to find myself again. I mean, there was a lot of work that I got to do in the interim. to get back to me.
So yeah. What would you tell someone who's listening, who is feeling rejected or betrayed in their romantic life, about how to get through that and get to the other side?
Well, first of all, one of the things I learned in that experience was that those dark nights of the soul, that is really a call from the soul to descend. It's a soul descent process. So I've done a lot of soul psychology work out of that experience. And the soul does its work in the dark. The soul does its work in the deep waters. And so I would say for anyone going through that experience, it's really important and challenging and difficult, I know, but important to trust that process, because your soul is calling you to a deeper level to do the work of pulling out the roots of beliefs and stories and habits and patterns that do not serve you. And so you're doing important work. So as painful as it is, one thing I learned is, you know, pain can be very purposeful.
Yeah.
And not that any of us would invite it, not that we would prefer it, certainly not. But when it comes, when it pays a visit, we need to sit up and pay attention and take notes and open our heart and listen. There's a lot of listening to do.
There's a lot of purification.
Yes.
If you do the work and you don't numb yourself, because I think when pain comes, a lot of people would just rather check out and numb themselves with alcohol, drugs, shopping, gambling.
Yeah.
Love and sex addiction. But if you are willing to go into it and feel it and learn from it, like Judith said, it can be very purifying, and you just are free when you get to the other side.
Yeah. And it's not easy. I mean, the challenge, we're caught in the challenge between holding on and letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to hold on to what we thought we had, even though we don't have it any longer. So to let go of holding on when it's clear that that thing is no more, that is really very challenging and painful. Yeah, so I really transformed my relationship with pain. I transformed my relationship in many ways with fear. You know, I really got to confront a lot of fear about my own capacity, you know, my own capability, my worth, all of that, you know, really fundamental stuff. And I, you know, I have zero regrets. And I look back on these experiences with nothing but gratitude. And that's not just, I'm not just using psychobabble, and I'm not spiritually bypassing, because that's tricky too.
Right.
You know, when we have a lot of this access to some of these concepts, it's easy to do a spiritual bypass and think that, well, I'm just going to substitute and shift and be happy. And I'm going to be just positive, and I'm not going to allow negative thoughts and all of that. I don't subscribe to that. I think that that's just putting a Band-Aid, and that really isn't addressing the real issue. That it's not just about positive thinking. In fact, I've done a podcast episode on why I'm not a fan of positive thinking for the reasons I just articulated.
Well, you can't slap a smiley face on sadness and heartbreak. You know, you have to feel it and let it move through you. And I like to think of emotions as the weather, but I do believe that our soul is the sky, and our soul cannot be touched or harmed. It stays connected to the divine. And people attach to their emotions for years and they identify themselves as I am depressed and I am sad instead of just feeling it and letting it pass through.
Right. Exactly.
So
100%. Yeah.
So let's talk about your doctoral dissertation. Yes, I did my research. It was entitled The Future of Feminism. Where do we go from here? You wrote that in 1995. Now that it's been almost 30 years, what aspects of the evolution of feminism have come true from your dissertation and what is still in the gap?
Oh, my. There's a great deal in the gap. Let me start there. Obviously, I mean, you know, in the U.S. today, and certain, you know, really all over the world, women's rights are being eroded. Women's rights are being taken away from us. So that right now, my granddaughter has fewer rights. She's only 11, but, you know, she's growing up in a world where women have fewer rights than I did as a young woman. Now, I grew up as a young woman in a world where there was no, well, there was birth control. There wasn't the pill. There wasn't easy birth control. Abortion was, this was pre Roe v. Wade. So abortion was illegal when I was growing up. So then, you know, we were given rights and now they've been taken away. And so there's a lot of work to do around empowering the culture to see the importance of women's equality and women's rights. The Equal Rights Amendment still has not passed.
Yeah.
ERA. So that's, you know, there are a lot of things in the gap. And at the same time, I think that now the conclusion that I came to in my dissertation was that the future of feminism is not about female superiority or female dominance. We do not, women do not wish that. It's not that that feminism as a movement, it almost doesn't even exist in much of any kind of official form today. But women's empowerment is not about women substituting, you know, female power for male power, and that women are seeking power over and that we seek to dominate. No, that's not the way women lead. That's not the way women interact. That's not the way women relate. The future of feminism is about collaboration. It's about community. It's about connection. That's the essence of the female principle. The female principle is not to dominate and destroy. It's to give birth to. It's to expand. It's to incorporate. And so the future of feminism is about embracing men and women, boys and girls, empowering all people. I believe, you know, if the feminist movement were to be an empowering movement in the world today, it would have to incorporate a both and philosophy. And there's a lot of work to do. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to go further into that.
There's a lot of work to do. I feel we have come far in the last 30 years as far as there's more women doctors than men. There's so many. We have finally, you know, Mexico has its first woman president. Yay. We have a female vice president. There's so many female Congress women and senators and Supreme Court members. So I feel even though it is, you know, just abominable that they overturn Roe versus Wade and, you know, in certain states like Louisiana, Plan B is illegal. But I do feel it's kind of a contrast because we have come so far as also women creating wealth and women, you know, starting businesses. And there's a lot of ground that has been taken in the last 30 years as far as women's empowerment.
Definitely. And we stand on the shoulders of those early feminists.
Oh, yeah.
Opened those doors and paved the way. You know, we stand on the shoulders of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and of Bella Abzug and of Kamala Harris and and the female Supreme Court justices. And so we have absolutely made tremendous advancement. And so that's, we absolutely do have much to celebrate. And I think that it's really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what is possible for women. And I actually think that when we talk about the unraveling of the current paradigm, the patriarchal paradigm, and that we're in transition, the new paradigm, I hope and believe that we are moving towards, is we are in the age of Aquarius now, astrologically, for 2,000 years. And that is just collectively, that's a collective event that will be characterized by increased harmony and union and oneness and peace. However, we are just at the beginning of that, and we're still transitioning out of the old paradigm. So we're still in the chaos and the upheaval and the change. We're still making our way through that. So I think it's important at this moment in history that women be empowered and that women own their leadership. And we were talking before we started recording about legacy.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, that is a legacy that I want to leave behind, would be the empowerment of women to own their voices, to own their leadership, to take a stand, to be courageous, to be creative, to be powerful, to own their power, you know, for women to stand shoulder to shoulder with men and create this world for humanity. That's not about one side or the other, but it's about the both and, which is the union of opposites.
Yeah, it feels like in a horror movie, right before you kill the monster, the villain, he's asleep in the bathtub and you think the movie's over and the credits are about to roll and you're like, oh, thank God they killed the monster. We can finish our popcorn and go home and have a peaceful evening. And then all of a sudden, right? The monster sits up and he's got a knife. And so I feel like energetically, that's what's happening now. It's like, oh, we thought, you know, women are empowered. They're doctors or lawyers. They're running companies. They're even billionaires and we can just relax. And as soon as that happened, you know, there's been this whole anti-feminism happening, and it's shocking, but we did get complacent in our power, even though it was still a patriarchy. We just thought we had inalienable rights that would not ever be taken away.
Yeah, well, that proved to be false, didn't it? Yeah. So, okay, all right, we see the work ahead of us.
Yes,
we get to raise our daughters and our sons.
And our sons, yeah.
I think it's important, critically important, that we raise our sons to be respectful, to honor, you know, women, girls. There's a lot of work to do in that area. You know, there's a lot of work to do to heal the masculine. You know, we talk about healing the wounded feminine, and I do a lot of work around that. We've got a very wounded masculine.
Can you explain to our listeners? Because I know you do a lot of work with the divine, healing the divine feminine and healing the divine masculine. In your work, how would you define the divine feminine and then define the divine masculine?
Well, I think the divine feminine is the spiritual essence of the female principle. You know, there's a female principle that's not about personality. It's not about ego. It's not embodied. You know, the divine feminine is a principle and the divine masculine is a principle that is, it's the yin and the yang. It's the light and the dark. It's the birth. It's the divine feminine is the principle of birth. It's the principle of growth. It's the principle of creation. That is the divine feminine. So it's standing for that principle of unity and oneness. That's the principle of the divine feminine. Now, the divine masculine is, I think that one is up for being still fleshed out. I don't know that we've fleshed that out. I just had a conversation yesterday with a very good friend of mine and a colleague who is doing work with men around the divine masculine. And he shared that it's a struggle, even getting men to be interested in doing this work. There's not an opening. It doesn't resonate out there with men in general. So there's a lot of work to do just to lay the groundwork for men to become open to the very idea of collaboration versus competition. You know, the traditional male principle is power over. And the divine masculine is an acceptance and an understanding of collaboration. It's power with. It's that we are greater when we collaborate. You know, we create bigger, greater when we're in the both and we collaborate. We have different points of view, and bringing everyone and everything to the table creates a bigger result. And we still live in a very pretty toxic masculine culture and environment. So, yeah, I think healing the masculine, it's not healing the divine. The divine is not in need of healing.
Right.
It's the divine is already healed, but it's healing the masculine and healing the feminine.
Well, I think both men and women are literally dying from trying to succeed in a toxic masculine hustle and grind, like work yourself to the bone, ignore your soul's need for play or relationship. That's what this whole podcast is about. It's how to go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. So you could even say it's about going from the toxic masculine and just draining all your energy to try to achieve to being in this feminine state of being balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And, you know, it's literally killing people to try to live under that old paradigm, because it's not nurturing for your health or your soul or your spirit.
And it leaves, yes, absolutely. And it leaves a terrible legacy for our children and for the new generations coming along. So as someone with an 11-year-old granddaughter, I care very much about the kind of world that she will inherit from us. And I feel very responsible around being a good ancestor. You know,
so speaking of being a good ancestor, what is your opinion or thoughts on death? Do you have a fear of it? Do you think you'll still be hanging out, guiding your 11-year-old granddaughter and like helping her make the right choices? Like, what is your opinion about where, I know nobody knows, but what do you think is going to happen?
I have thoughts. Of course, yeah. I don't. It's purely speculative.
Of course.
But I know people who have had near-death experiences. And so based on what we read and what is reported about near-death experiences, I do believe that consciousness continues after we die. The body, of course, is just a vehicle. This is just the meat and bones and the carcass that we leave behind. But the spirit that we are, the consciousness that we are, energy cannot be destroyed. So something goes on, some aspect of us, some light, some spirit, the consciousness that we are goes on. And I do believe in reincarnation. And I think that we probably spend some time getting ready to come back.
Do you want to come back?
Absolutely not.
you're that's it. This is your last incarnation. You're good. You got what you needed out of planet Earth.
We'll see. I don't know that I'm the one who gets to judge whether I have what I need. I think that forces and sources greater than I will make that decision if I get to come back or not. I've had a really full, really juicy life. And who knows if I'll come back? I have absolutely no idea. I wouldn't mind spending a few lifetimes out there in the cosmos exploring some of the other galaxies. I feel like I'm from there anyway. I really do feel like I am from some far off galaxy, and I'm just here visiting this time. And I've had that experience pretty much throughout my entire life. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So who was your, this is the second to last question, we're wrapping up here. Who was your favorite spiritual teacher, and what was the biggest lesson they taught you?
I would have to say it's probably been Marianne Williamson.
Oh, I love her. Okay.
Yeah. I went on a trip to India with her.
Whoa, cool. When was that?
Pardon?
When was that?
When it was in 1996, and it was her first trip to India. I don't know if she's gone since then. It was my one and only trip to India. But I was in a small group with her, and I remember her. I spent 3 weeks with her, day in and day out. And I remember her teaching us that we were there as pilgrims. That India, she called India the birth canal of spirituality for the world, and that we were there as pilgrims. And she really supported us to witness what we witnessed through the eyes of pilgrims, which made everything holy. You know, context is everything. And if you shift from the context of tourism to pilgrimage, different game.
Yeah.
So, you know, we visited the sacred sites and the temples and the Taj Mahal, and we met with the Dalai Lama, and we went to Bodh Gaya, and we went to the Ganges. And I mean, it was just an amazing, amazing experience. And when we were in Agra visiting the Taj Mahal, every morning we would go to the Taj, and behind on the backside, which you never see from the pictures, are all of these little alcoves. And Marianne would meet with us, and we would meditate there with her. And so that was a profound experience to have that kind of access to her and to see how really down to earth and real and authentic she is.
That is beautiful. Yeah, we asked her to be our, Ben and I, you know, my husband, we were both students of yours. We asked her to be our wedding officiant, and it was in the middle of the pandemic, and we just couldn't arrange that. But that's how much I like her, is I asked her to be my wedding officiant. So we both absolutely love Marianne. So the last question is, if you had a billboard on the side of the highway and it could tell the world one huge life-changing sentence that would change their paradigm in their life, what would your billboard say, Judith?
What a great question. What would my billboard say? You are far greater than you realize. I guess if it was one sentence, you are far greater than you realize.
And what does that mean to you? That's beautiful. But what does that mean to you?
Well, most people don't walk around with the conscious awareness that who they are is infinite potential. And who we are is infinite potential in form. We're infinite potential that has taken on a human form. But mostly we're just energy and space and open space. And so that infinite potential that we are, we have access to the field of infinite potential in that we are that field and that we have the capacity to be, do, and create literally anything if we align and draw it in and match in frequency and vibration the thing that we want to create. I know that Michael Beckwith teaches this. Marianne Williamson teaches this. Most of the spiritual teachers teach this, that everything is frequency and vibration. And for me, for anyone to become balanced, beautiful, and abundant, we need to be the frequency and the vibration of balance, of beauty, and abundance. And when we match that and meet that, it cannot help but be manifest in who we are.
What a beautiful thought to end on. I know you guys are going to want to find Judith online and look her up. So what is your website and how can they connect with you?
JudithRich.com, www.judithrich.com. I'm on Facebook, so you'll find me on Facebook. Just put my name in the search window and you'll find me. They can get my book on Amazon, Beyond the Box. Come to my podcast, The New Beyond. I would love for your listeners to come and because on my podcast, this is what I talk about. I talk about all the things. We've just kind of done a quick, an hour long culmination of everything that I have talked about for over 2 years on the podcast now. So come listen to the podcast. Love to have you.
Her podcast is great. Judith, you are so amazing. Thank you for all your years and hours of training individuals like myself to get over our fears and to step into the greatest version of ourselves. I'm really grateful for your trainings. Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for listening to another episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I know you got value out of this. Share this with a friend. Copy and paste a link to the show. Share it. Take a screenshot of yourself listening. Tag me at Rebecca E. Whitman on Instagram. I will give you a shout out. Let's keep this message going. This is more than a podcast. It's a revolution that you don't have to go through life tired, exhausted, burned out. You can live balanced, beautiful, and abundant. So thank you everyone for being on this journey with me and for being a fan of the show. I so appreciate you. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Thanks everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. It's your loyal listening that makes our show top 0.5% in the world. I would love to connect with you in person. We're having our second international retreat October 3rd through 6th in Belize. If you like yoga, sound baths, and want to get all seven pillars of abundance to a level 10, this retreat is for you. Just go to the link tree in the show notes to snag your $200 off promo code before April 15th. And let's end the year 2024 with momentum so that going into 2025, you will have so much abundance in all areas of life that you will be setting yourself up for the most incredible year ever. It is going to give you something to look forward to all year. Make sure you snag your spot before April 15th. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. My email address is on my website. Thank you so much for your loyal listening.
and we will see you on the next episode. And some of you lucky ladies will see you in Belize. Bye.